And Yaakov sends Malachim. Now, the irregular translation of the word Malachim is messengers. Rashi, however, says Malachim Mamish. They were real Malachim. Artsos Eleisov Achiv, to his brother Esav. Artsos Seir Sdei Adom. Here we see right away Esav Ochiv. It's not enough to tell us it's Esav. It's Esav, his brother, as if we would know that Esav is his brother. And then in Pasuk Hey, Vayitzav Osov Leimor. And this is how he commanded. Koy Soimrun Ladoini Leisov. This is how you should tell, what you should tell to my master Esav. The stress is on my master Esav. Koy Omar Abdecho Yaakov. This is what your servant Yaakov is saying. I mean, the tremendous stress on the subservient. What? Im Lavon Garti. I had lived with Lavon. Vo'eichar ad oto. And I have delayed my coming back until now. Says Rashi, why is this so important? The next portion that he says, I have a Yilishor Vachamor, that has a bearing on Esav's outlook of the Brochot. But why does he have to say Imlobon Garti? What does Esav care? Says Rashi, Garti, I did not settle down in by Lobon. I was just a gear by Lobon. Now, a ger usually is a person, it's not so important. A toshav is somebody that can reach, a citizen can reach a high level. Somebody who is a temporary citizen somewhere can be appointed to a high office. So, loy eincho kedai lishnoosi. That's how Rashi learned. Therefore, I'm just telling you, in lovon garti, that you should know that the reasons for you to hate me are gone. Al bir chesov yichosh erechem. Because what was the broche heve gevir le'achecho? Gevir is loshen gevuro, power. Gevir, right? So you say in Yiddish, you say a rich man is a gevir. I don't know if you ever heard the expression, a gevir. Because he has power, right? So heve gevir le'achecho was the broche that Yitzchok gave Yaakov. What kind of a gevir am I? What kind of power im lovon garti? I had no power at all. I was just a ger. So therefore you have no reason to hate me. This is how Rashi learns the rationale why Yaakov wants to convince Esau that he was just a ger. Dovoraker, another interpretation, says Rashi, garti begamatria tariak. The numerical value of garti is tariak, 613. Kilomar, what did he mean to say? Im Lavon Orosho Garti. I've lived with Lavon Orosho, but still Tariag Mitzvah Shomarti. I kept the Tariag Mitzvahs, I kept the commandments. Veloy Lomalti Mimaisov Oroim. I didn't become influenced by Lavon at all. Now that is no justification at all. That seems, that second interpretation of Rashi, that Im Lavon Garti, I kept the 613 commandments and I have been influenced by Lavon, contradicts the whole purpose of Yaakov saying it. Remember, according to Rashi's first interpretation, Rashi wants to convince Esav, you have no reason to hate me. Right? But how does it fit in? I kept the mitzvot. In other words, I'm a big shot. I'm powerful. I have self-control. I'm worthy of God's help. So it's counterproductive, he's saying, I kept Tariag mitzvot. He wants to show himself in a subservient nature, true? So how does it fit with saying, I kept the Tariag mitzvot? Alright, so this is one comment.
Why should it interest Esau that he kept the Tariag?
Exactly, exactly. If anything, it should encourage Esau's hatred if he kept the Tariag mitzvot.
Yeah.
We'll go on next pasuk. Vo. Vayihili shor vachamor tzoin ve'evet v'shivcho. And I had an ox and a donkey. Why is he saying it in singular, says Rashi? Because, says Rashi, Abo Omar li mitala shomayim mishmane oretz. But this is not mitala shomayim mishmane oretz. It's only like, you know, a few animals. This is the blessing for which you are hating me. Again, according to Rashi, it's consistent. The point that Yaakov is making to Esav, you have no reason to hate me because the blessings didn't work, didn't succeed. Now, so we have to understand what's really going on. Does Yaakov actually mean to trick Esav into believing that Yaakov really believes that the broches didn't succeed? And what's Yaakov trying to do now? Is Yaakov actually trying to convince Esau the broches really didn't work? Is this how Yaakov understood the brochos? That after he's going to receive the broches, Yaakov is going to become a multimillionaire with everything in the world, with a very high position? Is this the meaning that Yaakov saw in the broches? Obviously not. I mean, because we know that the broches of Yitzchak to Yaakov, mitala shomayim u'mishmane oretz, is only if you deserve it, then you will reach a point where you'll get everything you want, where your spiritual perfection will be reflected in this physical world. So you'll have mitala shomayim u'mishmane oretz. As long as spiritually you are not perfect, the broches don't apply. So what is Yaakov trying to do, convincing Esav that the broches didn't work? So it says in the commentary something very simple. You see, what is a broche for Esau? According to the perception of Esau, what is a broche? Something that I can see now. Ze, odom, odom, haze. If I can touch it and eat it, right, then it's a blessing. If it's tomorrow, tomorrow is a long time from now. I want today, the here and now. The nature of Esau is that what's important is the here and now. Here and now I have lentils. So what if tomorrow I have to give up my birthright? The lentils of today are more important than the blessings of tomorrow. Okay? So therefore, that's why he's telling Esau. According to your perception of the brochos, right? They weren't fulfilled. Meaning, according to your perception, leshitoscho, according to your opinion of what the brochos are all about, you have no reason to hate me. Because today, in the here and now, the broches don't apply. Those broches apply limos HaMashiach, when the fulfillment of the goal of the Jews will come about. This is when the broches will apply, not today. Which means, according to you, Esau, you have no reason to be consistent with your own opinion. You have no reason to hate me. Fine. So this answers Rashi's point of view that he's trying to convince Esau that the broches didn't work. Meaning, leshitoscho, according to your opinion, the broches didn't work. But how do we understand his boasting, I kept all the 613 commandments? So I saw it in two places. One, I saw it in the Chofetz Chaim al HaToro, and then I saw it somewhere else in the name of Reb Meir Shapiro, the Lubliner Rosh Yeshiva. He says the following idea. This statement, in Lobon Garti, I kept the 613 commandments, and I didn't learn from Lobon, is a statement of self-criticism for Jacob. Why? Because he says, the point is like this. When Lavan pursued his goals, he had one track mind. All that mattered were his goals. He was so involved in the fulfillment of his goals that nothing mattered. Now, ideally, Yaakov should have learned from Lavan to act for the good, for the right objectives, with the same methods that Laban used for the bad objectives. Meaning, what would have been a good lesson? A person is supposed to learn from all experiences. What was supposed to be Yaakov's lesson from Laban? Says the Chofetz Chaim, to have such an intense desire to succeed in your goal that nothing can stop you. So this is what he says. Even though I kept the 613 commandments, Loi lomarti, I didn't learn to really be so involved in doing good like Lavan is involved in doing bad, which means like this. I haven't really succeeded in deriving the benefit from Lavan. What would have been the benefit from Lavan, says the Chofetz Chaim? That I should be so intense in the reaching of my goal for doing good, like Lavan is intense in reaching his goal and doing bad. That I didn't succeed. Therefore, I'm not even meritorious of the brachas of my father. Because obviously my father sent me to Lavan, what for? I should become good friends with Lavan. Impossible. I should learn the bad things from Lavan. Impossible. There must have been one reason why our father sent us to Lavan. Obviously, to teach me how successful he is in doing bad, that I should transfer the methodology for doing good. This I didn't succeed. This is the meaning. Veloy lomadeti, I wasn't able to learn out good things, me myself horoim, from his doing the bad things. So, if so, says the Chofetz Chaim, it's a statement of self-criticism. He's telling Esav, you see, our father made a mistake with me, he sent me to Lavan to learn something good, and I didn't, so therefore you have nothing to worry about. That's how the Chofetz Chaim learns Pshat. Now, in Posuk Zayin, Vayoshuvu ha-malochim el Yaakov lemor. And the malochim come back, what were they supposed to say? We fulfilled our chiyuv. You said that we should say, im lo gargarti voichar adoto. We said it and finished. No, that's not what the malochim say. What do they say? Bonu elochicho el Esav. Again, the stress. To your brother, to Esav. Vegam holech likroscho, he's also going in front of, towards you. Ve'arba me'os ish imo, but he's going with 400 people. Now, what is the word vegam? Also, what do you mean? Bono lochicho le'sov ve'hu holech likroscho. That's what I want to know. I want to know, is he a danger to me or isn't he a danger to me? What does Yaakov want to know? He wants to know whether Esau is going to really try to destroy him or not. So what are they saying? Bonu elochicho leiso. Our first message is bonu elochicho leiso. Big deal. I mean, that's not part of what you're supposed to tell me. Vegam also hoylech likroscho. He's coming likroscho. The word likroscho is very difficult because it should be kenegdecho, like towards. What's likroscho? Likroscho, you know what the word implies? Even in modern Hebrew, you say, ani holech likratcha. I'll meet you halfway, sort of. Right? This is even an expression in modern Hebrew. Now, when I try to accommodate myself to you, I say, ani holech likratcha. So, how does that fit with the statement of what Esav is going to do? Ve'arba me'os ishimo. The 400 people with him is one thing for sure. He's going to fight. You don't come with 400 people to kiss your brother, right? Obviously, if you're coming with 400 people, you're coming to fight. So how are we to understand the message that the Malachim came back with to Yaakov? What are they saying? So are they saying Esau wants to destroy you? So they should have said, Esau, boy, marba mioisish. What is the holech likroscho? What is the vegam holech likroscho? What is the repetition elochicho, eleiso? Okay, so that's one problem. Next problem. Posuk ches. Vayiro Yaakov me'od, and Yaakov is very afraid. Vayetzer lo, and he bothered him. So what is the connection? Vayiro Yaakov, he was afraid and he bothered him. What bothered him? So one of the commentaries said, well, really he wasn't supposed to be afraid, because he's supposed to have faith in God. So it says like this, Vayiro Yaakov, Yaakov was afraid of Esav, and then it bothered him that he was afraid of Esav, remembering that he's not supposed to be afraid of Esav. Fine, that's a nice interpretation. But still, there is something about the repetition, Vayiro, Vayetzer lo. And then he divides the camp into two. And then he says a prayer. In Posuk Yud starts a prayer, Elokei Avi Avraham, Elokei Yitzchok, Kotoyti Mikol HaChasodim, I've already received so many kindness from you, so much kindness from you. And in Posuk Yud Bet, listen to Posuk Yud Bet. Hatzileini no, please save me, Miyad Ochi, from the hand of my brother, Miyad Esau, from the hand of Esau. Now, why would he repeat Miyad Ochi, Miyad Esau? First of all, just say one.
Repeat it also
Oh, you say, you're right. But then the question is, so why is it repeated before too? You're right. Every time we find him, Ohicho Esav. But we know Esav is his brother. But here it's more, even miyad, even the word diad is repeated. Let him say, Hatzileni no, miyad ohi Esav. The repetition of miyad ohi, miyad Esav, of course must have a meaning. I'm afraid of him. Because he can destroy me. And you blessed me that he shouldn't destroy me. So it says in the commentaries like this. You know that Esav, right, the koyach of the world in the world called the koyach of Esav, has one goal in mind. And the goal is the destruction of the Jewish people. That's Amalek. Amalek is Esav. Amalek is that part of Esav which tries to carry out the goal of being the eternal antagonist of Yaakov. Halocho beyodua Esav soine Yaakov. There is something in the powers, in those spiritual powers of Esav, that the goal of it is destroying Yaakov. Except, say the commentaries, there are two different methods how to succeed in that goal of destroying Yaakov. One method is the direct method, and that is the method that's called Esav's method. The open hatred. Open hatred. Anti-Semitism, kill the Jews, throw them into the gas chambers. That is the typical Esav method of getting rid of the Jews. But that's not the only method. Esav has another method. And that other method is that through friendship and to closeness to Yaakov, you should succeed in attracting him that he should give up his Judaism. That is the second method. But that method is called Ochicho, when he acts like your brother. He loves you. He's so close to you that it's so appealing to give up everything in order to become one of them.
It's a missionary approach today.
Right. It's not only that. It's the whole idea. I mean, it doesn't mean that every member of the Esav nation has in mind to destroy the Jews. But it means that part of the fulfillment of the goal of Esav is attracting the Jews to the materialistic life of Esav to such a degree that he'll give up everything in order to become part of that materialistic life. Remember, Esav represents Asio, the hunter, the man of the field, the success in the materialistic world. Through that success, it's so appealing, it's so nice, it's so pleasant to become one of them, that you give up your Judaism in order to become the brother of Esav. That method is called the method of Achi, my brother. Okay? Now, when the messengers go to Esav, and they have to come back with a clear-cut opinion, is he trying to destroy us or isn't he trying to destroy us? Is he good to us or is he against? Is he for us or is he against us? So take a look at the Pasuk Zion. Vayoshuva malochim el Yaakov leimor. Bonu, we came, and who do we find? We find a split personality. Elohicho. On the one hand, we see Ohicho, someone that plans to be extremely nice to you. Elesav, but we also saw a second face. We saw two faces. We saw a face of Ach, and we saw a face of Esav. Okay? Now, Vigam, hoylech likroscho. Another contradiction. He is Holech Likroscho. What does Holech Likroscho mean? He wants to meet you. He wants to be nice to you. He wants to compromise with you. So that shows friendship. But we are Bami Osi Shimoyu. So what is he taking along an army for? You see, like the split within Esav. That Esav is in him. Ahi, and he's also Esav, the enemy. Right? So it says like this. Yaakov realized that there is no contradiction between the two. Right? On the surface, it seems a contradiction. Here they are nice to you. Here they are not nice to you, so I don't know their real nature. So Yaakov realizes, Yaakov has a fear for both sides of Esav. The friendly part of Esav is as dangerous as the aggressive part of Esav. Vayiro Yaakov meod vayetzer lo. He felt fear for the physical attack, and Vayetzerlo, it bothered him deep inside, the tremendous danger of assimilation of that other face of Esav, the face which is friendly with you. So now, let's go over to Pasuk Yud Bet, the prayer of Yaakov. So what does he pray? Hatzileni no, he says to God. Please save me. From whom? First of all, miyat ochi. My first concern is his friendship. His friendship is more dangerous than his sword. Also, miyat Esau, when he acts like Esau, of course it's dangerous. But more Jews were lost to mixed marriages, let's say, to assimilation than to the gas chambers. That we don't realize, right? Assimilation is a greater danger, but it's not so obvious. That's why it's so much greater danger. So that's why he said, "Hatzileni no miyat ochi miyat Esau." Because in both faces of Esau are equally dangerous, and maybe Ochi is more dangerous than Esau. Okay? Now, the interesting part is that when they actually meet, we'll skip a little, we'll come back to it right away. When they actually meet and they kiss each other in chapter 33, Lamed Gimel, and they are so nice to each other, so take a look what Esau offers in chapter Lamed Gimel, Posuk Yud Bet. Says Esau in Posuk Yud Bet, Vayoymer. So Esau says to Yaakov, now that we are in such a friendly terms, Niso, let's travel together. Veneilecho, veilecho lenegdecho, I'll be across you. In other words, you'll always know where I am. We'll all be next to each other. I mean, we're such good brothers. We love each other. On the surface, we don't know exactly what does Esau mean, and what does Yaakov answer? Vayoymer elov. So Yaakov says, Adoini yoideya ki hailo dimrakim. I have little children. Right? On the surface, is so. Therefore, he goes on to say, in Posuk Yud Dalet, therefore, you go your speed and I'll go my speed. We don't have to walk together because I have little children. I have to take care of my properties. And better not. What's the point? The point, of course, that this offer of Esau is the offer to reinstate the original plan of Yitzchak. Remember the original plan of Yitzchak? The original plan of Yitzchak was to create this partnership that Esau will take care of all the physical needs of Yaakov. Yaakov will just take care of the spiritual endeavors. That's all. It will be a perfect partnership. Right? So Esau says, now that we are so friendly, let's reinstate that ideal state. We are friendly, says Yaakov. Yeah, but I have little kids. So therefore why? So therefore why? Of course, the problem is like this. Friendship, when Esau is very friendly with us, it's very pleasant for us. Right? But what's going to be with the next generation? Now, the next generation has nothing to fight against Esau. I mean, we recognize him, but what's going to be with the children? That's where the assimilation will start. In other words, the whole argument here between Esau, that Esau offers, let's walk together, it's not just let's walk together now. It's establishing the pattern of Esau and Yaakov going together. That would be, according to Yaakov, a sure way of total disappearance, total assimilation.
Yaakov had many opportunities then in order to change Esau. This one, if he would have let Esau stay with him, if he would have let him marry Dina. He had chances of turning Esau around where he wouldn't have had to worry right. about, so that's a very big lack of Yitachon that he didn't have
all
the
right.
power
so,
to change.
Alright, so you are asking, maybe he could have changed it. Maybe with Esau's willingness to be close together, maybe would have been able to change it, especially according to the Chazal. You know, the Chazal say that Yaakov put Dina, right, he covered her, and put her in a box in order that Esau shouldn't see her. And he's criticized for it, because who knows, maybe Dina would have changed Esau. That's what Chazal say. Maybe Dina would have been such a powerful influence over Esau that she would have changed Esau. So it's interesting, you know, Chazal say that when Dina gets into trouble later on in this parsha in Shechem, right, she goes out in the city just to meet people, and that's when she's kidnapped and raped. So it says over there, Dino bas Leo. It says, Dino, the daughter of Leo. Say Chazal, but she's also the daughter of Yaakov. Yes, but that characteristic of going out and socializing, that's something for Leo. Something that she received from Leo. What's the idea? The idea is the following. We know that Leo is the natural partner of Esau. You know, it says in Chazal that the natural zivuk of Esau was Leo, which means that potentially Esau, Leo didn't want that job, but potentially there is something in Leo that could have shaped and influenced Esau's behavior, because that's what a zivug is for. So it says that Dino had taken over some of Leo's characteristics. So therefore, Dino had those characteristics that makes her very capable of being a tremendously powerful influence on her mate. Dino has a natural tendency of, a natural capacity of being a very strong influence on her mate. The same way that Leo was able to influence Esau, Dino was able to influence Esau. The reason why she went out to Shechem is to socialize in order to change Shechem. She wanted to go out in order to have an influence of the city of Shechem to change their ways. They were Rishoyim, they were wicked people. Okay, that's why she went out. So Chazal say, who knows? Maybe if Yaakov wouldn't have put her in the box, maybe she would have been able to change Esau. But of course, this is all the ifs of history, which means Yaakov should have, at the time, considered the possibility that Esau can do tshuva. Doesn't mean that necessarily she would have succeeded. He should have considered the possibility. The fact that he didn't even consider the possibility, let's consider it a criticism for Yaakov. But it doesn't mean that actually he would have succeeded. Now, between these two things, the prayer of Yaakov and the actual meeting, something else happened. This is in chapter Lamed Bet, Posuk Chof Gimel. Vayokom balaylo hu. It was that night. Vayikach eshtei nosho veshtei shifosov. Yaakov takes first his wives, his shifchos, esachados yilodov, and he goes over Ma'avar Yavok. He goes over a river in order to take them over to the Israeli side, because the other side is Chutz La'aretz still. Now it's coming into Eretz Israel. Vayikochen vayavirem esanochal vayavir esasholoi. Then he went back to bring back the last few little things, the last few little items. You understand? You know, he keeps going back and forth. Takes over one group, takes over the other group, goes to the other side of the river, takes over something else. So finally there are a few small vessels left over. So he crosses over the river on the other side. Vayvose Yaakov levado. Now Yaakov is alone. Vayoveik ish imoy ad alois hashachar. So a certain man fights with him a whole night until the morning. Vayar ki lo yochoiloi, when the man saw that he's not able to beat him, vayega bekaf yerechoi, so he grabbed his hip, vateika kaf yerech Yaakov, he actually moved it out of place. Okay? Beyof koimoi. Now, the Torah later on makes a big deal out of this. Therefore, the Jews are not allowed to eat the Gidanoshe, because remember, the hip of Yaakov went out of place. It's not such a simple thing. Why is it so important? Fine, but at the end he won the fight. That's the main thing. Why is the hip that was moved out of place so significant later on? Then what happened? Vayoymer shalcheni. But in the morning, that man, whoever he is, he's down. And Yaakov is on top, and Yaakov is not letting him go. So he says, let me go, ki olo hashochar, it's already morning, you must let me go. That's very odd. I mean, why should I let you go? I mean, if I beat you, I do whatever I want. Says Rashi, because, when do the malochim say, kodosh, 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 Hashem tzvokos, maloch olor tzvokos, when do they say kedusha? During the day, in the morning. And I'm a malach. Right? So he says, Yaakov, lo yashalecha chokim berachtoni, you must bless me first. Some of you is trying to kill you. Right? And you finally beat him of all the requests you have. Right? You don't ask him, okay, give me your money or whatever. No. Give me your blessing. What's the idea? Give me your blessing. Vayomer lo mashmecho. What's your name? Vayomer Yaakov. Vayomer lo Yaakov yomer oichimcho. It's not Yaakov anymore. Kiyim Yisrael. Why? Because the word Yisrael, the word sar, what does the word sar mean? A minister. A person with power. You were able to overpower Kisoriso. You were able to be on top, to master the fight im Elohim with divine powers, Vimanoshim, and human beings. So you should know I'm not a regular human being, which is something that Yaakov already knows. Right? I am a Malach. I represent a power, right? A divine power that you just overcame. That's why you are Israel. Vayishal Yaakov emer hagir ano shmecho, so tell me, what's your name? Vayoymer, so he answers, lomo ze tishali shmi. Why do you ask me? It sounds like a Jewish kavanah. You answer a question with a question. What's your name? Why do you ask me? And what kind of an answer is that? And if you say, okay, so that's right, you didn't want to say. So why does the Torah record that part of the dialogue? Why is it an important part of the dialogue? Yaakov asks him, what's your name? Why do you want to know? Why is that an important piece of dialogue that the Torah has to put it down forever? And Yaakov doesn't insist. Yaakov says, nothing. So that Malach blesses him and that's it. And Yaakov is so overwhelmed by the experience in Posuk Lamed Aleph that he calls it Peniel. Ki roisi Elokim ponim el ponim. It was a prophetic experience. An experience that tells me something prophetic. So, what's really going on? Especially, the Chazal say, according to the oral tradition, we know that this is the Malach Shel Esav. This is the Malach Shel Esav, and it fits. The whole subject here is Esav, so it is Malach Shel Esav. So why didn't he tell him? Lomo ze tishali shmi? What did I say? What? Lomo ze tishali shmi? Tell him. My name is Esav. Why not? Is the Malach trying to cover it up? And what's the idea of the struggling a whole night? And what's the idea of the moved hip? The hip that moves out of place? What is the real symbolism of what's happening over here? What's happening over here is the following. As Yaakov himself sees, it's a prophetic vision. It's a vision that tells the history, the future history of the Jewish people in their struggle against Esau. First of all, what does Yaakov mean? The word Yaakov represents Yaakov holding on to the heel of Esau. When you hold on to someone's heel, that means that what you do affects him and what he does affects you. If he's stronger, he'll pull you along, right? Try to hold on to somebody's heel. If he's stronger, he'll just drag you along. If you are stronger, you hold him back. But you are bound to be together. You are destined to be tied to each other. That is Yaakov. When can you finally shake off that special relationship with Esau? When we become Yisrael. When will we become Israel? Even though our name is now Israel, but it's a name that comes from the future. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. When God will be one. You can say, yes, but God is one right now. No, that's not the point. The perception of God as one, that is what Hashem Echad means. How do we know it? Because it says, V'ne'emar, V'hoyu Hashem le'melech al kol ho'oretz, when the day will come, that God will be recognized as king of the world, when the whole world will recognize Hashem, Bayom Hahuye Hashem Echod Ushmo Echod. Then we will say God's name is one. So what does the statement mean? That the perception of God as one, this is what Hashem Echod means. Of course God is one. But our perception of God as one, that is the goal. That is Bayom Hahu. And that day we will be Israel. It will be after the fight. Now, during the fight, it's dark. It's exile. Exile is always associated with darkness. Why? Because we don't see our way clearly. It's dark. It's nighttime. So how do we survive? Only through faith. Not through actually seeing things clearly. This is why the Mefarshim say, what do we say after Hashem Elokeichem Emes? Right? We say, Hashem Elokeichem Emes. It's true. But what is the prayer we say right afterwards in the morning? V'yatziv v'nachon v'kayom. Yes, it's a clear fact. Yatziv nachon kayom v'yashar nemon. What do we say at night? Hashem Elokeichem Emes. V'emunok also is because at night you can't see things clearly. It can't be v'yatziv v'nachon. At night it can only be v'emunah. You can only rely on faith. You're blinded. It's too dark. Okay? This is what the fortune say. Therefore, the struggle between Esav and Yaakov is only at night. When the morning comes, when the point in history will come, when everything will become clear. And by the way, we find in Mefarshim the description of the Messianic era is the point when history will start making sense. When all of a sudden we'll be able to look at history and understand it, right? As we are going through history, we live with questions. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? I don't understand this. This is not fair. That is not fair. We live in darkness. We're going through history in darkness. when will history make sense in retrospect? Once we'll come to Yemos HaMashiach, we'll look back at history, and history will become clear. That's the point in history. That is the daylight. That is the sunrise. At that point, we won't have to struggle with Esav anymore. Our internal and external enemy that's called Esav, we won't have to fight him anymore. That is the point that he gives up. And what is Beirach Toni? What is the blessing that Yaakov demands from that Malach? It says that one of the details of the Messianic era is the recognition of the Goyim, of the centrality of the Jews in world history. Meaning, it's not just me. People think that the coming of the Mashiach is a Jewish experience. It's not true. It's a universal experience. If you take a look at the second chapter in Yeshayahu, it's a universal experience that the world will recognize. Ki mitzion teitzei Torah. We have to go to Zion, recognize the Jews, Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim, let them tell us what's right and what's wrong. The recognition of the Jews as being right, that's part of the Messianic era. That is a blessing. When do you bless someone? I want you to be healthy. Now it's, I recognize your right to be healthy. I recognize your right to be rich. That's when I bless you. Blessing is a recognition that you deserve what you have. That is a blessing. So, when Yaakov wants the blessing of the Malach in the morning, he's establishing the fact that when the morning of history will come, in other words, Yemos HaMashiach, the world will recognize that Yaakov was right all along. That is the blessing. So what is the meaning of the Gid HaNoshe, the moved hip? What does it mean? So it says in the Mefarshim the following. Finally, we'll be able to win, right? But during our struggle, there will be one painful part. One thing will be very, very painful. Now, if we take a look at Yaakov's body, right? Yes, his body and his legs. What do they represent in terms of Jewish history? Remember, the struggle of Yaakov is the struggle of the Jews throughout history. What does the body represent? The body usually is what remains constant. When you move, we see your legs are moving. Yes, your legs move from place to place. Your feet move. And your body remains constant and it just follows your legs. True. Exile is made up of movement. Going from one country to another country. One exile to another exile, right? Went to Babylonia, to North Africa, to Spain, to Holland, to England, to United States, to Russia. We are constantly moving. Now, every time we move, it becomes a new challenge to overcome the culture, the habits, the language of the new country. And when the body of Yaakov meets the legs of Yaakov, remember, the legs is the movement and body is what's constant. Body is the Torah. Body is Judaism unchanged. The legs is what have to adjust to the new place. When the body of Yaakov, when the Torah, the constant body of Yaakov, have to meet the new challenge, the new place, the meeting point is very painful. A lot of Jews are lost. That's what the Mefarshim say. Jews are lost when the body of Yaakov meets the new place, meets its legs. The hip is where the leg meets the body. In other words, when the Golus meets the Torah, that is the assimilation of the Jews, right? Throughout history, throughout the exile, when they can't overcome the challenge of the new exile, of the new place. This is why it's the Gid HaNoshe, it's the hip bone. It's the hip. Because the hip represents the meeting point between the body, the constant part of Yaakov, and the legs, the moving part of Yaakov. That is when the Torah has to face the new challenges. Right away we win, but we lose. We lose people. We lose people. People intermarry. People assimilate in every exile. Okay? This is what the pain of the Gid HaNoshe represents. And this is why the Torah is so makbid. But remember, in every generation, don't forget the Gid HaNoshe. Because those are the Jews that are going to be lost as Yaakov is walking. That's the pain of walking, of moving from one place to the other. And then we are coming to the last point. So Yaakov asks, what is your name? If you tell me your name, then we'll be able to recognize our enemy. It's very important to recognize your enemy. Because if you recognize your enemy, then you can defend yourself, you can prepare yourself for the fight, it's much easier. So the Malach answers him, Lomo. You know what the word Lomo? Lema, for whatever purpose. Sometimes my purpose is to fight you physically. Then I take on one name. Sometimes I have to attack you by interacting with you socially. Then I take on another name, which means I am multifaceted. Lomo zeti shalishmi is not an answer. Why do you ask? Not at all. Lomo says lema zeti shalishmi. You'll constantly be asking my name because you'll never know. I am multifaceted. This is why the Golus Edoim is multifaceted. It's interesting. Even though, what is the Golus called for the last 2,000 years? Esau, Edoim. But he takes on the face. He puts on a mask. Sometimes he's Russia, sometimes he's Poland, sometimes he's in the United States, sometimes he's Spain. Which means, Golus Edoim has a lot of faces. Even though the basic strength, the basic power is Edoim, but it's not only Rome, it's not only Edoim, it's not only the ones that are known as Edom. It has a lot of faces, which means the last Golus, you can't identify who is our enemy. Our enemy has many faces, so therefore you constantly have to be on guard. This is what he's answering. Yaakov asks, Vayomer Yaakov, tell me your name, Hagido nono shmecho, tell me your name so I can be on guard when I'll meet you. So he says, Lomo zeh tishalishmi. You'll constantly be asking my name, tishalishmi. And it will always be Lomo zeh, which means for a certain purpose, lema, which means constantly I will have a purpose to fight you. So sometimes I'll be one nation, sometimes I'll be another nation. In other words, Golus Edoim is so tricky that we can't even recognize our enemy. We have to be on guard against everybody because he has no name. It used to be Golus Bovel, so we know Bovel was our antagonist. Poras, so Poras was our antagonist. Yovon was our antagonist. Golus Edoim is Lomo zeti shalishmi. You keep asking the name, who is our enemy, who is our friend? You'll never know. It can be anybody and everybody at the same time. This is why it's so dangerous. This is what the Mefarshim say. This is what the importance of the dialogue is. The dialogue establishes the fact that we constantly have to be on guard. It's the most delicate and the most tricky of all Goluyos, is the Golus Edoim. Because of the fact that Esau covers himself in many names. This is part of his danger. Okay, we'll stop here. I won't be here for a while, but somebody else will be saying this here.
He said he didn't win physically, he won spiritually.
That is the victory.
Yeah.
The victory is a spiritual victory, of course. But at the end, the physical...
That means the Torah will survive even though that physically he was permanently damaged with this problem going
right.
Constantly trying to be physically destroyed.
Right.
Esau got in one last...
That is his victory. His victory is the constant assimilation from the...
Esau got in through history one last... You're going to constantly in danger of being physically destroyed.
Right.